Hi, and welcome to Chief for Yourself. I'm Gio. It's a great day to raise your vibration. And raising your vibration is what we like to do around here. We're sort of your rudder on the high seas of consciousness. Quick question for you today. Why would a person want to spend a year alone in one of the most desolate and inhospitable places on the planet? On today's program, we'll hear from a man who did just that. Right off the top, thanks very much for your reaction to the Russell Paul interview. A lot of good input about that, and Russell did a great job. Very much enjoyed talking to him. If you're catching this show at chiefforyourself.com, you've probably noticed some changes, too. We're using, a new web host. I mentioned in a blog post that it was a move that we had to make. I think it's going to work out pretty well for both you and me. It's easier for me to put the program together this way now, and hopefully easier for you to navigate around the place. So we'll see how it works out. Of course, the program will still be offered through a long list of audio and video providers. This episode, what we like to call a simulcast. You'll find it on Chief for Yourself, CHIV as well. Our guest today took the expression getting away from it all and really ran with it all the way to the tip of South America. We'll hear from Robert Cull when Chief for Yourself continues.
Hi, my name's Paul, and I'm the host of the Caffeination Podcast, a podcast that doesn't just deal with caffeine and technology as topics. They're more of a lifestyle around here. If you're like me and you can't get out of bed in the morning without that little cup of coffee, if you're like me and you need to know all the best and the greatest in technology news from around the world and right next to you, then you need to tune into the Caffeination Podcast, www.caffeination.com. Thanks, and stay caffeinated.
This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network, where listeners and podcasters come together. Find out more at blueberrywithnoease.com.
Remember, the quick and easy way to reach us is chiefforyourself@gmail.com. chiefforyourself@gmail.com. For centuries now, we've been reminded that the unexamined life is not worth living. Well, in February of 2001, Robert Cull had plenty of time for examination while spending a year living alone along the southern tip of Chile. During his stay on the island of Patagonia, he journaled his experiences of deep solitude and their effects on body and mind. Those experiences are contained in his book, Solitude, Seeking Wisdom in Extremes. Robert, thanks for being with us today on Chief for Yourself, and I guess we'll start by saying, of all the places in the world where someone could do the kind of inner work you did, why such an unforgiving place as Patagonia?
It's like a lot of the challenging things we go through in our life. It may feel unforgiving in the moment, but as we look back on it, we realize it was a real gift, an opportunity to break through some of our own internal resistances. And so being in such a challenging environment, in some sense, forced me to go through things I might not have otherwise gone through. Because I was looking for complete solitude, I really needed to go to a pretty extreme environment wherever it's easy to be, people are. And I wanted to really explore where I would go, both on the outside in terms of survival and also inwardly, spending a year completely by myself.
So did you have face-to-face contact with anyone during that year?
Once. I was right on the edge of a national park on this little tiny island where I was on the southern coast of Chile. And the government officials came by once to see if I would survive the winter. The winters are very stark down there. And so they had my longitude and latitude coordinations and came in to check up. I didn't expect them, but that's the only time I saw them a year.
Mm-hmm. You brought a kitten along on this trip. Looking back, you questioned yourself on your choice of companion?
Yeah, I did. It wasn't an entire choice. It was a strong suggestion from the Chilean government. They said if I was planning to eat shellfish, I really needed to take a cat because of a red tide, and I wouldn't have access to the government testing program. What locals do is they feed suspect shellfish to a cat, and if the cat dies, they don't eat it themselves. So essentially treat the cat as a guinea pig. And, of course, it didn't work. I got real close to the cat. Instead of him testing shellfish for me, I was out catching fish for him. But it changed the dynamic. It's the first time I've ever taken a pet into solitude. And it really changes the dynamic because one of the joys of solitude is to simply be able to follow your rhythms in conjunction with the world around, the natural world. And so in taking another creature that I was sort of quote-unquote responsible for, it changed that. My relationship with Kat also brought up some really dark stuff inside myself that was difficult to face. I know, like all of us that are honest, we know that we're capable of some pretty dark behavior. That's part of our human makeup. We all have a shadow, and we tend to like to avoid it, or experiencing it directly, even though intellectually we might know we've got it there. And so some really dark, demonic, almost rage came up in my relationship with Kat. And so it was a privilege, even though at the time, and I still am quite troubled by it, it was still a real opportunity to explore that stuff that I usually shy away from in solitude. You're kind of naked with yourself. You have to face things that you may otherwise be able to avoid.
You do write about facing those dark aspects of yourself. Did what you found surprise you in any way?
I wouldn't say surprise, but it deeply troubled me. Like I say, intellectually, I'm aware that given the right circumstance, we're all capable of horrific stuff. And so I don't exclude myself from that, but seeing it is incredibly valuable to see it directly. And I mean, it's not like I caused him physical injury, but my own rage really troubled me deeply. And over and over I would vow that I wouldn't yell at him, I wouldn't slap him, I wouldn't throw at him, and over he would just push me over the edge. Or that was my experience, that I was being pushed over the edge. And the backdrop to this was pretty constant physical pain and some really strong psycho-emotional pain as well. So all of those things contributed to being on the edge, and I'd just lose it. And so it wasn't a surprise, but it was definitely troubling to have to directly acknowledge, oh, this is part of who I am.
One of your earlier jobs was construction worker. You built your own shelter from a lot of the material you brought along. Under the circumstances, were you satisfied with the way your housing situation panned out, happy with the job you did, and how many changes could you have made?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was really a wonderful little cabin. It's one of the most comfortable places I've ever lived. It was only 10 feet by 16 feet, five of which on the side was an open porch. But I designed it exactly the way I wanted it, and so it worked very, very well for me. And I also was really concerned with the aesthetics of it. The location where I was, so amazingly beautiful that I didn't want what I built to detract from it. The process of building was challenging. There were certainly some changes I would have made, like, for example, bringing the right size staples for the staple gun. So I would have to pound in a couple of thousand staples by hand with a hammer, smashing my finger regularly, hold the tarp on the outside of the cabin, because the cabin had a wood frame and then covered with translucent tarp on the outside and clear plastic on the inside to let lots of light in during the winter. And so there were some pretty frustrating moments during the construction, but yeah, I was really happy with the final outcome, and it felt so comfortable.
Besides keeping busy with a daily subsistence regimen, did you ever feel you were kind of losing it, sort of going a little crazy?
Sure, but, how would I know? there's nobody to compare myself to, or, it's kind of like you just, that's one of the wonderful things when you settle into direct empiricism of just noticing what's going on. There's a sense, well, yeah, I might be crazy, but I don't know. This is just what's going on. And there were certainly the most difficult times were when I wouldn't accept what was going on, when I had expectations of how I thought it should be out there, and then when that didn't manifest. And so it was a long process to slowly, like in all of our lives, solitude isn't different in some sense than anything else. It's just more intense. And so coming to accept ourselves and our lives as things are is our own. You know, we have these notions of how things should be, and then we're constantly comparing ourselves, and that creates a huge amount of distress.
So as busy as you were able to slip into the stillness, into a meditative state.
Yeah, and the busyness eased off. I was very, very busy for the first months, building the camp and all of that. But then as time went on, I intentionally didn't keep myself. That's what we tend to do in our culture. That's probably the predominant way we avoid really facing ourselves, is to stay busy. And so I would consciously not do that and leave days and sometimes weeks open without any special activity, just to meditate and listen to the sound and be with myself and with life. And it was a real challenge, but that's why I went, is to have long open blocks of time to settle inner exploration.
Of course, there were some major world developments in the year 2001, the 9/11 attacks most notable. While you were on this journey, did you have any kind of intuitive feeling that certain things were happening?
No, And I didn't find out about 9/11 until March, when my friend Patty came to spend a month on the island after I'd been there the year to help me in the transition back to the world of people. Because in a year of solitude, things change. You go into distant inner and outer places as well. And so she brought me the news, and it didn't really affect me because I missed all the media hype, all the political manipulation around. And from down there, all the doings of human beings where I was, everything about humanity and culture was way out on the distant horizon. Of course, I was still embedded in culture because, you know, as an individual, my consciousness is embedded in culture and social world through which it you know, develops. So it's not as though I ceased being human. But all the comings and goings of civilization were just over the horizon somewhere, a bear's on the horizon. And so when Patty came and told me about 9/11, it was like, oh, okay, you know, on the other side of the world collapsed. You know, that kind of stuff happens all the time in third world countries. It's just in the States, people aren't used to that. And I've lived a lot in third world countries. So it didn't affect me the same way. And in going back and reviewing my journal for a period, I don't find anything in there unusual. And reflecting further is that the non-human world didn't change on 9/11. You know, the sky didn't change, the clouds didn't change, the sea didn't change, the trees and the creatures around me, everything was just going on with their life. Mm-hmm. And so the change was quite minuscule in that corner of the world.
Did you notice any changes in your relationships to Patty or to people in general once you came back?
I think I have just a different perspective on a lot of the political situation. The thing that troubled me most when I came out, and you know, even down there, I stayed in southern Chile, a small town, for a couple of months, and then slowly wandered my way up into Santiago, which is the capital. And down there, essentially everyone, no matter what their political orientation, conservative or liberal, they were certainly appalled by the attacks. But it was fairly common for people to say, what did the United States expect? They've been meddling in other countries' politics for so many years that sooner or later they were going to be on the receiving end of it. And of course, Chile knows well about this because the United States was deeply implicated in the armed takeover by Pinochet. Mm-hmm. Chileans are very aware of United States' interference in their own internal affairs. So there was that aspect, and then what was really troubling to me was the American response. There seemed, on the part of politicians, to be no capacity for reflection, inner reflection, on what role American foreign policy might have had in all of this. It was just, you know, sort of self-righteous, blaming the other, the evil other, without considering their own inner, you know, America's own inner shadow and relationship to the world. I saw it as kind of a collective manifestation of what through in solitude in some ways, my relationship with the wind. For quite a while, I experienced myself as being a vulnerable victim of the malevolence of the wind, that the wind was counting my destruction.
Ooh.
And it took a long time to slowly trust enough to open myself to experience the wind openly, because of my own projections, I was terrified that the wind was intent on my destruction. And I only could think of defending myself. And then little by little, I slowly began to withdraw some of my projections and engage with the wind with a more open heart. And so my sense, when I came back and I saw what America was doing, I thought, wow, you know, there's just no kind of sign of reaching out, of trying to end what's going on. It's all about those evil others, and we've got to dominate them and destroy them and build Fortress America to be even stronger than it is. And I found that really troubling.
Anything else you want to add or any changes you want to make? We'll leave it at that.
I think the only additional thing is how important it seems to me to change our relationship with the non-human world. One of those joys is this experience of belonging to the world, of not being an outsider, but actually sinking in and feeling the world as home, not knowing it intellectually, but truly experiencing the world as home and the trees and the animals as to be family. And how that changed my behavior as I settled deeper and deeper into that awareness. It really softened my behavior and my attitude towards the world a lot. So that was an important part of the year as well, I think.
The book is Solitude, Seeking Wisdom in Extremes, from New World Library. Dr. Robert Kull, thanks for being with us today on Chief for Yourself.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You can learn more about Robert Kull at his website, robertkull.org. If you're on the chiefforyourself.com audio page, you'll see a link right there next to the player. That's it for today. Thanks for being here. I'm Gio. I'll talk to you soon.